A little bit later in the hour, we'll be talking about melting glaciers. But first, I want to talk to you about something that we've all seen, the plots in movies or novels. You know, remember those maybe Lost World where the explorers stumble upon a lost paradise? It's a untouched, unspoiled, undiscovered by humans, complete with exotic new species and botanical wonders. But could you ever wonder that? Does that ever really happen in real life? Can there be such an undiscovered Garden of Eden? Well, perhaps there is, because according to an announcement made this week about such a find in the Foya Mountain Range in western New Guinea, on a recent expedition into the largely unexplored territory, an international team of scientists discovered a lost world of flora and fauna never seen before by Western scientists, including, they found, 4 new butterfly species, 20 new frog species, and the first new bird species discovered in New Guinea in 60 years. Now, if you're wondering, like I am, what this place must look like, and what happens to it now? Does it get overrun with ecotourists? Well, maybe my next guest might be able to help us decide. He was part of that expedition. And if you'd like to join our discussion about this Garden of Eden, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Bruce Beeler is the Vice President of the Melanesia Center for Biodiversity Conservation at Conservation International in Washington. And he joined us by phone from Iguazu Falls, Brazil. Did I get that right?
That's right, Ira. How are you?
Iguazu Falls. Thank you.
Great to be with you.
You're welcome. Thank you for being with us. Tell us about this expedition. This just didn't happen overnight, did it?
It didn't happen overnight, and it really caught us a little bit by surprise because people like myself have been going on field trips or expeditions to the island of New Guinea for a long time now. So each time someone goes, there's one fewer place to find out about. And we were following in the tracks of Jared Diamond of UCLA, and he'd been there briefly in 1979 and again in 1981, looking exclusively at birds. And so we went back without really knowing what to find. We knew he had found this lost bower bird, and we thought there might be other things there. And, of course, as you announced, there were lots and lots of things there.
Tell us what the place looks like. So it took you like 25 years to get there, and you walk in and aha,
yeah.
You know?
Well,
strings
you
get
know,
to play.
We didn't walk in. We took a helicopter. That's uh-huh. One of the reasons. It's a long walk to get where we got. Up above the sort of up into the mist zone and the cloud zone around 5,000 feet, you really need a helicopter. That's what Jared did, and that's what we did as well. To walk would probably take anywhere from 15 to 20 days each way, and that's just too far in this rapid day and age. We just don't have that much time.
Mm-hmm. And why do people go there just specifically to find new species? Look for new.
I mean, why do we do what we do? I mean. No,
yeah.
Essentially, what we're trying to do is map the biodiversity of the island of New Guinea. It's something Professor Diamond has been doing for some 45 years now, and I've been doing the same thing for 30 years. And there are lots of colleagues. You know, I work on birds. There are others that work on frogs or rhododendrons or mammals. And we all just sort of get a bug, you know, and have to follow our muse. In this case, I'm trying to, you know, see what birds are where.
Yeah. Describe for us some of the new birds you found.
Sure. Well, really, we found this one new species, which we're in the process of describing. It's called a honey-eater bird, or a honey-eater. It's a very common group. It's much like, you know, the sparrow group here is in North America, sparrows or jays. Very widespread. There are hundreds of species in Australia and New Guinea region. This just happened to be one that apparently only lives in these Foya Mountains. And that's so. It's exciting because it's new. I'm planning to name it after my wife. And it's also exciting because it's one more species now that we know lives only in this one little mountain range tucked away in western New Guinea. And that makes that mountain range a little more important to the world in terms of where the biodiversity is.
Tell us about some of the wildlife, the vegetation you found, the flowers.
Let me paint a picture for you a little bit of what the mountain range looks like. I'd say for those who live in the east of the United States, it looks a little bit like the Great Smoky Mountains. They're about the same elevation, a little bit higher. They top out at around 7,000 feet. entirely forested, so very beautiful, rounded, verdant hills, not too rugged, but it's a large area and without a single trail or a single road or a single landing ground in this mountain area means it's very, very isolated physically, hard to get into, hard to move around. So when we helicoptered into the area, we landed in a little bog that was the only clearing up top there. And we anywhere we wanted to go, we either had to put little tags on the trees so we didn't get lost or cut a trail. So we basically, you know, it was pretty clear we were with local indigenous people who own this area. And they protested that they'd never been here, and this, they were just like us looking at this area for the first time. So some of the wildlife were things we were familiar with, and some things were things that in most places in New Guinea are very, very rare, like this, what I call the giant echidna, or long-beaked echidna, which is a spiny anteater-type creature, which is, in fact, a monotreme, which is related to the marsupials. It's one of the egg-laying Australian mammals. Really a bizarre creature that creeps around on the ground, weighs about 10, 15 pounds, and eats mainly earthworms.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And how many of these are around? It's just totally unique.
This species lives throughout New Guinea. Well, there's some debate about how many species there are. So there's either one of these large forms, or there are four or five. And that's one of the things that we were asking that question. And that hasn't been answered in the laboratory yet, so we don't know. But they're apparently fewer and fewer because scientists have looked for these on a number of the mountain ranges. And what we've found is that they're disappearing from some of the other mountain ranges in New Guinea.
Now, I understand that some of the wild animals you saw were unafraid of humans.
Well, just like this spiny anteater. When we found it, you have to go out at night to find them. So me being a birdman, I was fast asleep. But they essentially put it in a pillowcase and brought it back to camp for measuring and photographing. So it was simply a matter of bumping into it, these pretty hapless creatures. And that's why they're so sensitive to hunting and the like. They don't have much natural protection against humans with dogs.
Mm-hmm. Let me get a question from one of our listeners.
Sure.
Let's go to Jay in Wyoming. Hi, Jay.
Hi. How are you?
Hi there. Go ahead.
My comment is I was just wondering how you plan on maintaining the pristine surrounding of this place now that it sounds like the word is out, so to speak. And with Western access, it just seems like a lot of people might tend to crowd the area. And it seems a bit ironic that you approached it via helicopter, but it just seems like it's really sacred in this day and age to discover a place like this. And I'm just wondering what your plans are.
Remember, we didn't really discover this place. It was Professor Diamond who did back in 1979. And that was actually announced to the world with great excitement when he rediscovered that bowerbird, which was great stuff and really got us motivated. Now, in the 24 years between his announcement, which was actually in 1981, I believe, and our trip, not a single Western party of any sort, no scientists, no poachers, no loggers, nobody has actually gone into that mountain range. So that gives you a bit of the idea of the physical isolation and also just the difficulties of getting a permit to get into Western New Guinea. It's not an easy place to go even when you want to go.
There is politics involved in getting there.
There are politics, yes. Just like if you wanted to go do some zoological exploration in the United States, there are lots of permits to get before you can do that. It's the same in Indonesia. It really isn't that much different. In both cases, the countries are protecting their national interests.
And is that what took you 25 years to get back there, going through all the red tape?
It was a mix of things. Certainly, we had to piece together a good team. That's relatively easy. But the politics of the permits, getting some money from donors to do the work, but especially locating a helicopter, because helicopters are hard to come by there, putting all those things together all at the same time. At one time or another, we had pieces of the puzzle, but we didn't have them all at once until this last year in November of 2005.
Mm-hmm. Do you have plans to go back, or can you get back? If it took 25 years, maybe only 25 days the next time.
Well, hardly. we're there right now. So Conservation International has a team. We've been working in this forest area that includes the Foya Mountains for the last year and a half. We've had a team on the ground. So we have a field base in the communities there with scientific and conservation staff, our main focus is conservation. The science is really in support of conservation. So the gentleman caller asked about, well, what about opening this up to the future? We do conservation through a public process, a transparent process. In other words, we let the world know what's an important place and what's not an important place. We don't keep this as a secret. It's part of our burden of doing the job in a public fashion. It's not a closed door behind the scenes deal that we're doing. So we basically are held to the highest standards. We have to work with everybody, the local communities, the local government, the national government, and everyone's watching what we're doing, and we have to do it right.
Is the Indonesian government excited about all the publicity this has gotten, or would they rather not have had that?
Well, from what I hear, they are very excited. I got an email from our director in Jakarta this morning, and he said everyone's quite excited, and they're actually going to meet the president next week to talk about this and describe the discovery. So that's good news.
Is there more to be discovered there?
Absolutely. It's hard to imagine. Hard to imagine how difficult it is to find, find everything. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack. It's so rich. There's so many things, and also there's so many limitations. So there's only 12 hours in the day, essentially, for me looking for birds. And if you actually look at the lists of what Professor Diamond saw and what I saw, quite different because it's just a sampling thing. We each of us go at a different season. We see certain birds that we both saw, and then there are numbers of things that only one of the groups saw. So we think we just scratched the surface.
Well, good luck to you, and we'll have you back after the next time you go.
That's wonderful. Thanks so much. Good to talk to you.
Thank you for taking time to talk with us. Bruce Buehler, Vice President of the Melanesia Center for Biodiversity Conservation at Conservation International in Washington, talking to us about that new Indonesian discovery of the wildlife there. We're going to take a short break and switch gears and come back and talk about glaciers, all the melting glaciers around the world. If you want to ask questions about that, we have a couple of experts with us, and one explorer has been to many of them. So stay with us. We'll be right back.